Hello and welcome to the Lincolncast. This is the Giant Bomb Community's Guild Wars 2 podcast for the week of May 25th. I'm your host, Soul Confessor Cynic, and joining me today is our now regular crew, Numerama.
Hi!
Rawson.
I've been browsing JList for an hour. I hate myself.
And Durukon make this week, so you get all Tarkin coming back to the show. Hey, Tarkin.
Hello there.
So, this week is going to be theme week, unlike last week, which is more of a regular show. We don't really have any news this week. Everything's been boring, so we're going to chuck it over to our theme. This week's theme is leaks, because there was a leak this week, about 5 days ago, and we're going to be talking about the stuff that was revealed on that, or at least what we think the changes on that leak mean. But before that, how has your week been, Noob?
My week? What did I do? I don't quite remember. I played lots of Assassin's Creed 2.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Do you like it?
Well, the problem with that game is it gets progressively difficult as you advance in the game and you get better armor. So that's, I don't know. That's no
fun.
Isn't that the point? Well, I mean, I like my games to be easy. So I might actually have to get a trainer so I can cheat. Or I might not be able to beat the game.
But yeah. You play Arma 2.
Right, but Arma 2 is like, I don't know. Arma 2 doesn't get progressively harder. It just stays hard the entire time.
It's an easy game. It's an easy game.
Yeah, okay. I'm a casual gamer. I normally just play like Plants vs. Zombies. I'm not into this kind of Assassin's Creed stuff. And I swear to God, playing Assassin's Creed with the mouse and keyboard is not the best experience to play Assassin's Creed with.
Oh, there you go. That's where the problem is. Yeah. It's the mouse and keyboard. You need a gamepad for that game.
And even something simple like, and enemies shouldn't be able to block you, and they should all die in one shot. shouldn't be like multiple blocks. It should be one block, and you hit it once, and the block disappears.
And then they're dead. And then they're dead.
And they're dead. No, and then it creates a ring of fire, killing enemies within a certain radius.
Just hold down the button for rapid fire attack.
Yeah, fireball. But, yeah, why doesn't my Assassin's Creed character shoot fireballs? Come on, Ezio.
I'm just imagining an Assassin's Creed shmup.
Yeah. What's a shmup?
Dodon Assassin's Creed.
Oh, shoot him up. Okay. I think I get the view.
Anyway, how's your week been, Rawson?
A lot of Diablo.
Just move on. Come on.
I got Dragon's Dogma.
Okay.
Have you started playing it?
Yeah, I've been playing it.
Are you disappointed like a lot of people are?
What?
Are you disappointed by that game? Because people seem to be disappointed by that game.
It's like, they got so close to figuring out what the hell people don't like about Monster Hunter over here, but
nice.
The camera controls for that game still fucking suck. It's really distracting and really, really annoying, and the fact that they leave some options on by default, like essentially the left side of your screen is like a chat log of your NPCs just talking about random crap. And I'm pretty sure the NPCs that follow me around are autistic because they just tell me about things like, you know, the people of this village use this grocer to get food.
Nice.
Really?
That's so useful. Thanks, Max.
Thank you.
Well, so, maybe, you know, it's just not something everyone knows. Would you know that if you went into some town?
The grocer? Yes, I'm pretty sure that's kind of obvious. But
that's how they work. Yeah,
I guess you should get it if you like the idea of spending 30 hours running around with three people who all have Asperger's.
Oh, man. Isn't the point that they don't have souls or some shit? I guess that's a terrible excuse. Hey, we wrote out the
what are you,
we wrote out
what are
the
you trying to say
writing.
About people who are autistic?
Moving
Jesus
on.
Christ.
What are you up to in Diablo 3?
No.
I, I've beaten Act 1 on Hell.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
It was
Hell. How many characters do you have up to there? About one or
just
two?
One.
Or?
Just one.
Just one? What are you playing?
A monk.
A monk. Yeah, that seems to be like the way to go for a lot of people out there. But
I'm having a lot of survivability issues, and I'm having a lot of issues with the itemization in that game.
Yeah. Like, the fact that I think they balanced it such that the auction house is essentially the way to get constant upgrades, because just finding stuff... Yeah, it's really, really hard to find yourself in that game.
It feels like at this point the game is purposefully giving me loot that is not useful to me in hopes that I put it up on the auction house.
Yeah, like I find really great loot for classes that I'm not playing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think Noob's having a, like a friend spat over
Fuck
there.
Fuck you guys.
He just left. He just walked away. And Tarkin, how's your week been?
I've been busy with uni work. I haven't bought Diablo 3, so
okay.
At Good least
so you're one step ahead.
Good
there.
Plan.
You're avoiding the instant failure that it results in of all things to do with uni. Like I mean, I'm behind on like the one thing I have left to do for uni because of Diablo 3. Great, go me. Anyway. does Noob have a counterpoint? Does Noob have a thing to say about Diablo 3? So moving on to our topic this week, we've got leaks. So what happened
WikiLeaks.
Was...
WikiLeaks.
Essentially. Pretty much. Like it was like a dude... I'm not sure...
Did he get arrested?
I don't think so. I don't really care, to be honest. Okay. But the main thing was he leaked a patch notes from the beta. Essentially, what Ana did was they had the beta, the open beta, about a month ago now, and went, hey, this is what we had to change, and they released patch notes saying for their current beta testers, so the internal closed beta testers, hey, this is what we changed, and just so you know. So essentially, the guy who was in the closed beta released or leaked the patch notes, and Noob is... Someone is ridiculously playing with our show notes. This is so cool.
Oh, wow.
All right, so continuing on to back anime. On topic, please.
It was you, wasn't it, Noob?
What?
Joke.
What?
Anyway. What? Okay, so...
Stop talking about things people can't see or hear, okay? No one's going to understand this. You're just dicking up the podcast. Good work.
It was going so smoothly. It was going pretty smoothly for what? What did we make it to this week? About like 10 minutes? 10 minutes, and now it's here.
That's like a record. That's like a new record.
Yeah. Like the last 2 weeks, three weeks, it was just me talking for like 30 seconds, and then you talk, and then derail from there. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so the stuff included in the patch notes include things like chain. Like you can see it. It's on Reddit. You can just search for it there. But I've pretty much cherry picked what I found was the most interesting parts of that chat of the patch notes, and that includes stuff like chat, gameplay, changes to the world versus world, and some of the input stuff that we've been complaining about. So what we have this week is first, I guess we were talking about the uninteresting stuff. So chat. So the patch note on here again, most of this stuff actually couldn't be guessing.
Excuse me. How dare you claim that chat is uninteresting?
Yeah.
I am an avid role player.
Oh, God.
I
remember a lot of terrible stuff that went on in chat in certain places in Guild Wars. Dude.
I am
Shinji
Asura,
Island. That,
half
that place is a cesspool of disgusting human beings.
Wait, are these like otaku roleplayer dudes, or is it...
Well, I don't know. Well, it's people pretending to have girlfriends and boyfriends over Guild Wars.
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't know. You know what? Let's continue. I don't want to think of
it.
Just go to Shinji Island sometime in the original Guild Wars, and then go on to the chat and just look. I don't know if they're still there. They were like a month ago. But it's just a place.
Wait,
it's a
people getting married over Guild Wars now? Like, again?
What?
No, it's just like all roleplay. It just devolves into cyber sex.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry to burst your bubble.
Sorry if you were eating.
You saying about chat in do you actually care about the chat stuff?
No,
I do.
I always tell. Really?
Yeah.
I pretty much limit when I play these games. When I play MMOs or pretty much just Guild Wars 1, like, I don't pretty much beyond that.
I hope you can turn off certain chats, yeah.
And Guild.
Yeah,
you have to turn off Alliance any chat, sort of, mostly.
Like, public chat channel.
And, or trade chat channel.
Yeah, anything like that. And you just use, well, if you're me, you just use, like, Mumble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Please fuck those guys. Fuck those guys.
Stop
using such bad language. Jesus. What if kids are listening to this?
Family podcast.
Family podcast.
Family podcast. But yeah, okay, so the actual change, to put into context for the people that actually get this back onto topic, is local chat, say, is now very short range. They now have an option for /shout, or /map, that has a map range of chat. So essentially, what this fixes is, for example, if you're in a dynamic event in the game and you want to talk to the people just around you, essentially, you can chat into, because obviously you won't be a team. Like, in most of the cases, when you're in a dynamic event and you're playing by yourself, you're not actually going to be teamed up with the guys around you. It doesn't automatically say, hey, these guys are doing the same dynamic event. Let's put them in one team. What you'll be doing now is you can talk into local, or just like /say, I think it was, and essentially communicate with everyone within a certain radius of you. So they can get pretty much the same kind of functionality out of this. You'll be able to hear just the guys around you, probably the guys only doing your dynamic event, and as well as like be able to communicate with them. So what do you guys think? I'm going to go around the table here. Probably going to do that for all of these because there's quite a few to get to. Nu, right. What do you think?
I think that's a pretty good idea. So you don't get flooded. Well, because it's instance and you don't want to get flooded with messages that are completely irrelevant to you and that you don't really need to hear. And that definitely filters out a lot of the garbage you might be hearing on chat, like in the original Guild Wars.
God. Well, the original Guild Wars kind of
had the worst local chat in the world. If you went to Shinji Island...
Like as soon as you go outside the town, you don't hear anything.
Right, unless you have Alliance chat turned on, which is possibly the worst thing you can do.
Well, only if you're a shitty Alliance.
Shut your fucking face. Shut your damn face. My Alliance was good, except for the people in it, so I guess it was a pretty shitty Alliance. You're right.
Yeah, I guess it was a pretty shitty Alliance.
Yeah, but this sounds good. So cool. It filters out a lot of shit, so you don't have to disable everything. You can just, not hang out with people that are shit.
I guess. And also, they do have the option of the /map if you do want to talk to, I don't know, people, I guess, on the internet. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but Rawson, what are your thoughts?
I think it's basically just they're adding an industry standard stuff at this point. Because, you do expect, just being able to at least talk to somebody who's right in front of you in the game. That's all I can really say. Like, all right.
Without a billion things going on.
Yeah, it's expected at this point. So yeah, it's not really any surprise. This is pretty
much fixing something that was missing. Tarkane, do you just agree or do you have anything to add?
Pretty much. It's just basically they ported over Guild Wars 1, basically, but didn't realize how much bigger Guild Wars 2 is. So they're just basically fixing what they didn't realize was a problem.
That's great, because, like, for example, that I talked last week about a dynamic event in the mountains when you're doing the Norn quests, and there's bunnies involved, and they knock you over and stuff. And during that event, I actually figured out the easiest way to get around it. If you don't want to hear that, probably leave for about 30 seconds. But essentially what you do...
All right, I'll be back. See ya.
Is when you pick up the pot to take back to for the offering, you dodge twice and then use the pot's inbuilt, like, because all the items have skills, like all the items you pick up have skills. The only skill it's got is like an inbuilt speed boost for like 3 seconds. So all you do is dodge twice, speed boost, and you're there. Every single one, no matter how far away it is from the lady, dodge twice, speed boost, and you're there. So essentially, I sent this into local to help like a billion dudes who are failing at the quest. And no one really picked it up because either they had local turned off because it was way too much cross chat, or they just didn't know I was talking to them because they didn't realize that local. Well, they didn't realize people would be trying to help each other over local. But anyway, so moving on, that's that essentially. It's a pretty good change. It's obviously industry standard, and it's about time they put that in. Next thing, I'm just going down the list. I want to talk about something's lost.
Good pro tip for that event, by the way.
Yeah. But yeah, just in case anyone has problems with it, assuming they listened to this or at all to this podcast, I don't know. Input bindings. So they have finally put in stuff that should have been in from the start. I guess they were in, then they took them out, then put them back in again. But essentially what they've done is what we can guess, because some people who may or may not be in the betas are provided some clarification. Input bindings means that you can finally have alt keys. So Alt-1, Alt-2, Alt-3, then W, and whatever else you want to change to extend or get all your bar functionality into a small amount of keys, i.e. toggle keys, are now finally in the game. Same with like a mouse keys. So if you have like one of those Razer things with 12 buttons on it, you can get that working. Noob, what do you think?
So this is like where you hold down Alt and you press 1?
In case of Guild Wars 1, what a bunch of people did was instead of having 1 through 8 bound to their different buttons, they just had 1 through 4. So sorry, you couldn't do this in Guild Wars 1.
No. Right.
But for example, if you can have 1 through 4 bound to the first 4 skills, then have Alt-1, Alt-2, Alt-3, Alt-4 bound to the last 4 skills. So you only have to use half the bar, which means everything's closer to your left hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's industry standard, again, and something they should have been in. But so no real thoughts about the matter.
Well, I mean, like, the controls are fine as it is. I haven't come across games, at least in Guild Wars, where I felt like I needed to shift the controls around. I mean,
really? Because
like I've done like where you've shift the HUD around, so like the UI and like the health bars. That was pretty fun to mess around with.
So what, for the betas, what did you do for the second half of your skill bar?
I just clicked using my mouse. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Well, there you go.
I'm
not much of a
simple people. Simple methods.
I bet you keyboard turned as well.
Yeah.
You are so not going to make it into my raid group. I will dock you. I will dock all your DKP, mister.
So, Rosin, I think we know your opinion. What do you think about this, finally?
I'm a lazy asshole, so I don't to reach over very far. That's actually good for me. I can just imagine just go ahead and assigning Alt 1 through 5. Just to be 6 through 0.
Yeah, pretty much.
It works well. Maybe I will go ahead and buy one of those Razer mice and...
My thoughts were, and I said this to my friends, and I think he finally got like a Rat 7 or something ridiculous like that, but I'm pretty sure Razer's going to put out a special edition mouse for Guild Wars 2. Like they did for Old Republic.
I'm just imagining doing that and being able to control my character entirely with my right hand.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. I'd totally want to... Well, you couldn't. You need to be able to dodge. But I guess you can kind of... No, not really.
Well, you can put, like, 2 buttons to dodge each side on your mouse.
Exactly. Like, it's got... for example, you've got the Razer, it's got 12 buttons. You have 1 through 10, and then the last 2 to be dodge buttons, I guess.
By the way, I've seen that Razer MMO mouse, and it is... Yep. Stupid?
Ridiculous. Stupid. Ridiculous.
I don't think how you... I feel like that's really uncomfortable to use. Like, some people swear by it.
Like, some people really swear by it. Like, I can't see how you can program yourself to use all 12 buttons with just your thumb.
Well, what kind of games... There's something wrong with a game where you need to have a mouse with that many buttons.
It's for WoW. Like, I'm pretty sure WoW has...
WoW has too many buttons. There, I'm just gonna say it. And it's too many goddamn buttons.
And you know what? I agree. Fully agree. I think it's just too much.
Most of them are pointless.
Most of them are really situational, and you don't really need that. Like, I prefer a game streamlined with that shit streamlined out.
Yeah, like when I was playing WoW as a Shadow Priest, and I had like 3 dots. Completely separate damage over time attacks that, of course, I always had to stack because otherwise I'm hurting myself. Just simplify those down and just give me 1 fucking dot so that way I'm not juggling 3 stupid things?
And Tarkin, thoughts?
Pretty much the same with chat. They've extended it. In Guild Wars 1, it wasn't as big a deal because you could rebind some of the keys closest to your hand.
Yeah.
And since they only had 8 skills, it wasn't as big a deal. Now with 10, and...
Yeah, I don't know.
How many mouse buttons do you guys
have?
I need this. How many mouse buttons do you guys have?
I only got two.
Yeah, I only have two.
I mean, like, two beyond the main...
Right.
So
I use my mouse buttons, or they're dedicated for like voice chat and clients and like other stuff.
There you go.
So I never use them in game, except maybe mouse 4. But that's only an Arma.
Salute. Exciting.
Well, I was just gonna say, yeah, I mean beyond the standard 3, I guess.
Yeah.
I just have 2 and I use those for either if I'm in a game, it's for mumble, or if I'm just browsing the web, of course it's forward and back.
So,
fits my needs.
So again, ArenaNet putting industry standard shit into the game, which is good. But like, you pretty much have to at this point. Like, a lot of people find stupid little things to go absolutely batshit crazy over. So the more of that these they fix / just put in the first place, the better. Moving on from, well, I guess it's somewhat to do with input bindings, and this one's a bit hard to discern. I'm actually not fully sure what this means. Missiles now fire in the direction of the camera when players has no target and is holding down the right mouse button. D-O-W-V-W-D-W-N, the right mouse button. I hate you, dude. I hate you. I really shouldn't let you guys have editing privilege of this show. Anyway.
Look at all of this writing all over the damn sheet.
So what this means essentially is that it's pretty much what it says, but I'm not sure how much effect this would have on it. So essentially, when you don't have a player targeted, but I'm not sure if that means highlighted, because for example, if I was playing a warrior and I'd put my auto attack onto someone, I'd use pretty much from that point onwards, unless there was intending to use a different skill to spike them, I pretty much just run around them, and with a mouse, in my field of view, they wouldn't necessarily be entirely in that. They might be on the far right or the far left.
I think all it really means is that in that situation, it now behaves sort of like a first-person shooter, or just a shooter.
Right, it's like, because the coolest feature in Diablo 2 is you could just use your magic against air. And that's what it seems like they're doing, you know. Just plus, I don't know. Can you manually like dodge
cast your magic
by moving left and
darkness.
Right? You can move around left and right, and then dodge attacks, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So this might be like, oh, this person might dodge, so I'll just manually attack them, and
maybe
guess where their position is.
But it says when no target, when you have
right because even if you're targeted, then. You can't anticipate where the other person is moving. It's just shooting at the time when they're moving. So you could like shoot the arrow in front of someone, and then it'll hit them.
Oh, I'm not sure that the missile system actually works like that.
Really?
Yeah, this sounds more like it's straight up when you don't have someone targeted, you can fire shit into the air and lol. That sounds what this sounds like. Just to read it out again, is missiles now fire in the direction of the camera when player has no target and is holding down the right mouse button.
Yeah, that sounds like you're firing where the camera is looking at, not where your character is looking at. So
yeah. Well, that's what Noob was saying, that you could lead targets by essentially camera looking to where they would be and then firing.
I can see that being used like that though.
It could, especially for AoE stuff. Like these guys suggest missiles.
Whether or not it'll actually be useful in a PvE or PvP, I can't really say.
Very different, exactly. As long as this doesn't like hinder me freaking like moving around whilst attacking someone. I assume they don't have to be on your screen. All they need to be is targeted, and then that's fine. But if I have to have them on my screen at all times, then it limits how much I can like dodge around and stuff whilst firing and keeping DPS on. So hopefully that's not the case. Does anyone else have anything else to add? We can move on.
It's cool, like in Diablo 2, where you just shoot it in the air.
Yay.
Or what about Diablo 3?
Shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah, just hold down spacebar and just shoot. Dude, I totally
no,
do that.
Shift, not spacebar.
Oh, well,
I
remapped the spacebar.
Oh, you fucking heathen.
Because left shift is just weird. It's from pinky. I don't want to use my pinky.
Gotta work. Give your pinky a workout. It deserves.
So I just hold down spacebar and then fire my shit into. For a wizard, it'd just be left clicking for. I think it was disintegrate. I'm just like wiping out entire screens of enemies just by holding. Anyway.
I lift spoons anyway. With my pinky fingers to give them a workout.
Or just play guitar, you know?
No, I'm too much of a nerd.
Too much effort. Alright, let's see. What else can we go on before going to the more interesting stuff? Auto attacks no longer continue to attack an unselected target.
Okay.
That's actually not... I don't know if that's a good thing. But what do you... Okay, so essentially what I, how am I interpreting this is that, for example, if you are auto attacking someone, so if you're melee, for example, and then select someone new, your character will now turn to the new target instead of continuing to attack forward in the direction of where your line of sight is looking. You would actually turn to the new target instead of, yeah. So essentially, it would be... what I think this means is by disabling auto attacks on unselected targets, it improves the ability for melee to switch targets, which is probably a good thing. Thoughts? Yeah. That's how I'm interpreting.
Did everyone delete like all of the important stuff that was written in the show notes?
No.
Okay.
No, I've just been skipping around to go to the... I'm going to do the important stuff last. But yeah, Rosen, what do you think? What's your interpretation of this?
For the auto attacks?
Yeah.
Or the completely missing show notes?
The auto attacks.
I'm not really sure, honestly. It's...
But Guild Wars had auto attacks, like Guild Wars 2?
Well, yeah, the first skill
yeah.
is an auto attack.
Oh, okay.
That's what it means, essentially.
I thought you just had to spam it.
Oh, what?
I think...
Have you been spamming your first... Have you just been matching one?
Yeah.
You know, one of my first ideas for names terrible. For this podcast was match one to win.
Wow.
you're bad at this.
But I realized it would give the wrong idea of what Guild Wars 2 does. Because, yeah, you don't need to match one. I think you just double-click, I think it was, or double-tap.
Right-click.
One. Yeah, or right-click.
Or you can just hit it once.
And it just works?
And it just continues until they're out of range.
I found that clicking it once mostly works, but the only way I was making certain, because I do tend to move around a lot and like change my mouse look away from where the target is, so no longer centered. Double tapping tends to be, I don't know if it does anything different or is just reissuing the same command so it realizes what I'm doing, but yeah, I thought double. Anyway, so yeah, which is good, I guess. You can auto attack Noob. To answer your ridiculous question.
Thank you. But you always like, what? They're like, there's no auto attack in this game. And I'm like, oh, holy crap. So I guess I have to always spam one.
Oh my god. Well, what they meant was there was no neutral attack.
Oh.
And no, like, chasing targets automatically and stuff. But, oh my god. So, wait. So far we have Rawson, who didn't realize you could... move whilst casting, I think it is. And yeah. You who didn't realize there was an auto attack.
Oh.
It does things differently. God damn it. I'm used to World of Warcraft. Just give me World of Warcraft clones from here to eternity, and I will always claim the new one will be the next WoW killer, and then it will fucking die in a blaze of glory, and then I will get hyped up for the next WoW clone. Just give me those. Put them out every 6 months so I can get hyped up for each one. Because the next one will be the one, I swear to God.
Okay.
Look, motherfucker, I'm still waiting for Age of Conan to kill World of Warcraft.
Alright, so I think that's all the disinteresting ones done.
It had breasts in it.
That's what I did differently. The interesting stuff. So the first one I think I'm going to do is trait tiers are in.
So what does that mean? I have no idea what that
that's
means.
That's literally all the information we've got to go off. But the general consensus means... So how it works at the moment is you have your traits. So multiple trait lines per class. You invest points in each trait line and they each have two stats which they increase. And there's no overlap. So essentially... you put points in a line and perhaps your strength and your healing would increase, for example. I'm not sure if that's an actual combination in the game, but whatever.
It's not.
I don't care. Anyway, so as you do that, you unlock minor traits and major trait slots. Minor traits are something you can't change. They're unique to each trait tree. And essentially, once you unlock them, then they're a passive benefit to your character. So some minor traits are really fantastic, and there are reasons to invest in the trait line, even though you may not have originally spec that way. But anyway, that aside, major traits are what we're talking about here. So essentially what happens is when you hit every 10, so on 10 points, 20 points, and 30 points, there's a 30-point system, you unlock a major trait slot, and that unlocks many fully customizable, very powerful buffs to your characters that can be either be passive or just a modifier to an existing skill. So in this case, trait tiers are in, and the general consensus is that originally, what is like now is if you put in 10 points, now you have access to every major trait in that tree. And you can have essentially the one that your build requires to be broken. Now it looks like you have to put in, there'd be some unlocked at 10 points, some unlocked at 30 points, and some unlocked at 20 points. Like, that's the kind of thing they're looking to put in there, I think. What do you guys think if that's the case? I actually think it is interesting in that it makes build wars a bit more difficult. Because
build wars?
Build wars.
Build wars. It's what we used to call, because Guild Wars 1 was all about making a character build. And half the
Bob
game would
the
be
builder
your build.
Wars.
Bob the Builder.
So Guild Wars is what a lot of people used to call it, because you'd spend like an hour or so, or 2 hours out of every five, changing your character build rather than playing the game. Because that would determine your effectiveness. So in this way, it makes Guild Wars harder, because it'd be more difficult to assign traits, because maybe something you want is only unlocked at 20 trait points instead of or automatically unlocked at 10. So I'm just going to go around the table again. Tarkin, what are your thoughts?
I'm still not too sure. It's an interesting way of ensuring that you have to specialize to ensure that you get your choice, but
that's a good point. I didn't think of it that way. So I guess, because again, like, it's a 30-point system, and what I mean by that is I think you have only 70 points to choose from.
Yeah, about 70 points.
Yeah, from your at level 80. So you can max out, and each skill tree, essentially sub trait line, can maxes out at 30 points. So you can have two max trait lines and one at 10, or any combination thereof. So maybe you want to bring all five up to 10 for some reason. So yeah, you're right. Like, for example, if you are encouraging people to unlock higher levels of higher tiers of traits by investing a single trait line, you are essentially forcing specialization to some extent. I don't know how I feel about that. I love, like, some of the best builds from the original Guild Wars were just completely off the wall random stuff. stuff you wouldn't remotely think of. Like, for example, a warrior dervish with a bunch of like dervish skills to make it work. Or a warrior dervish with just a scythe and using warrior skills anyway because it's broken. Stuff like that you could do, because you could essentially pick up, okay, I want six here, well, eight there.
Well, you just explained the thing there. Because it's broken, that's why it worked, that's why people did it.
Like, but that's the fun. Think,
yeah, there's the fun involved, but I don't quite think they're going for that sort of broken system again.
No, the thing is, it wasn't that broken. They were just so highly specialized that they were very powerful.
Yeah, because no one would have seen it before, and B, because you're so specialized, obviously you can't do other stuff, but you become incredibly good at one thing. So you can have warriors in the original Guild Wars that just didn't allow people around them to move.
And
straight up, and they wouldn't do much damage, and they'd be survivable because they're warriors, but like stuff like that could happen because you had such an open system. At the same time, this resulted in an incredibly difficult balancing experience for Arena Net, and a resulting pretty unbalanced metagame, or continually shifting metagame, because you had the ability for everyone to come up with entirely new things.
I vaguely recall reading once that ArenaNet's method of determining what needed to be fixed in balances was to literally check out what the most commonly used skills were by players and then nerf those skills.
Pretty much. That's what it felt like, anyway.
Oh.
That's definitely what it felt like. Yeah. But that's because of the shifting meta. Like, at some point, it was like, okay, these guys are using this, so everyone has to use that, or you're just going to be falling behind. Which was great. It's like StarCraft. Like, it's pretty much exactly like StarCraft. Someone comes up with, like, a really interesting strategy, and that becomes a staple.
Until they just nerf it.
Or until someone finds a counter that just completely unmodes it. That's exactly how the original Guild Wars was. You'd have things you'd move from Euro Spike to Hex Spike to Ranger Spike, and continually moving and changing metagames because of this system. And that's why I loved Build Wars, even though it was that 2 out of 5 hours of just changing your build. I loved it. And the limitation of the trait system, even though it's probably positive, as Rawson says, to limit what people can do with the system and therefore make things a little bit more structured and a little more balanced. I think it's a bit lame, to be honest. That's my opinion. Noob, what are your thoughts on the system? You're more of a PvE guy, so you don't really give a shit. There you go. All right, so that was that. Did anyone have anything else to add?
I think it'll probably result in a bit more predictability in terms of playstyles. If you're doing this whole trait thing, yes, it is going to funnel people into one of a few separate things, but hopefully, like, what you can do with those builds will provide the actual variety that people want.
Yeah,
but this is something that's, you know, it's really early to say, and we're not even going to be able to find out the actual effects of it until
the game comes out
after
next
release.
Week. Yeah.
Okay, so a few months after the game comes out, which will probably be
a few months
September.
From now. September. Like 3 months after the game comes out in September. That's what I'm guessing.
You totally overstepped 2 silver, by the way. Anyway.
I'm playing the beta right now, so
fuck
you owe me 2 silver.
No, you aren't.
That's not how it works, and no, you're not. You're a lying bastard.
Yeah.
So moving on. Just to footnote into what Rawson just said, I agree. Like, I guess they originally planned it as there being distinct classes and each class having a distinct feel. And if they do limit it, that does kind of underline the fact that elementalist will be an elementalist. It won't be some weird thing with swords that runs around like bamfing to dudes. And
I feel like that would be fun, though.
Like,
I agree.
That's what I like about the original Guild Wars. But
when did the original Guild Wars have elementalists running around with swords?
No, it wasn't that. But it was an example of what someone could do. Yeah, they could.
They still can. They wouldn't be very effective.
With short swords.
In fact, they can shoot a couple lightning bolts out of their swords.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So, yeah, that's the trait tiers. And I actually can't wait to see how that affects the next beta weekend event. I'm totally going to test that. Next week, or next time, I'm just going to be in PvP the whole time. I don't think I'm going to do any PvE because I don't want to spoil anything more of it for myself. So I'm definitely going to have a jump in and see how that turns out.
But the game's coming out next week, so we might as well just play the PvE.
So the next one would be start order or tournaments as soon as there are enough rosters ready in structured PvP.
Oh, thank God.
So order tournaments are in.
Yes.
Yes.
Good. Finally. I hope they extend that for just regular, like, competitive PvP across the board, because one thing that was a problem during the beta weekend was now the competitive PvP, it was 3 rounds on 3 separate maps each time, right?
Right.
So what would happen is by the 3rd round, it would be like 2 people versus 1 person. And usually I was the 1 person. People would just fucking leave.
People would leave after 1 or 2.
And I'm hoping that ArenaNet has something in mind, and that seems like a good start.
Oh yeah, if you leave, they ban your account for a week. They should do that.
Hopefully. God, that'd be great.
No, I was totally a person who left. I was like, yeah, I'm done leaving. I thought they'd just sub in new people. Like the
original team. I don't like my team.
No, they didn't. They didn't bring in new people. And
that's an entirely different issue. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, asshole. You ruined my
good job, you piece of shit.
In RA, in the original Guild Wars, if someone left, then it just the next match it would sub someone in. And everything would go off hanky-dory. And they haven't put that in. That's something I haven't heard that complaint before.
But structured auto tournaments, that sounds like a nice idea. For more like competitive, like, hey, how about my group of guys fights your group of guys? Yeah, it's a nice idea, and it's something that a lot of competitive games have been sorely lacking as of late. Like, I remember hearing from a friend who did a lot of like high level WoW PvP, and what they would have to do is him and the people he wanted to play against would have to organize and be like, all right, we're gonna go ahead and queue up for PvP at this specific time and hope we queue up with each other. And it was kind of a mess. Yeah. So hopefully this will make it a lot easier to play against the people you want to actually play against.
Yeah.
And not just random assholes.
But even that, like, what it sounds like is if, say, 125 people are in structured PvP, and suddenly go, hey, let's just form a 25 groups or whatever it would be of people and have a proper, like, tiered tournament system with a winner at the end on the fly. And that sounds like a pretty cool thing for it to do. I'd totally be down for that, because essentially what it is at the moment, I know, and we discussed it like a couple weeks ago, I think it was, what we had was a bunch of us did structured PvP for about an hour, but then spent hours and hours and hours in World versus World. This would have a little bit more impetus, or added a little bit more impetus to staying in structured to actually try and compete in one of these tournaments, because that sounds like a really fun, or possibly really fun experience, especially if it's on the fly and you don't have to like pre-plan, as you're saying, with friends to be there and all that kind of stuff. Tarkin, do you have any thoughts?
Not really. It's just, yeah, it's a good idea. Cool. I mean,
does anyone else, Rawson be probably the guy who knows, does anyone else actually do this kind of stuff in their structured PvP stuff that you know of? I actually, for me, it's a pretty new idea.
The being able to organize, like, you know, between
auto tournaments without organizations.
Oh, auto tournament? I'm not really sure. I was going to say, like,
I'm going to say Street Fighter, but that's not really an MMO.
Yeah. Didn't the original Random Arena technically have an auto tournament? Tournament?
No, it wasn't a tournament. It was just matchmaking until the end.
No. I mean, not Random Arena. Sorry, but like Heroes Ascent.
Oh yeah, that was an automated tournament system.
Yep. Yeah, and the guild versus guild.
No, that was one versus one.
Yeah, in MMOs, I'm not sure, but it kind of reminded me a lot of like the MOBA games. Just reading it. Yeah.
Actually, you hit it on the head. It's exactly like Heroes Ascent. Well, not quite, because there's no like ever changing maps with a defined map structure. But it's definitely like that. I mean, and it was awesome. A lot of people love
there's
Heroes
changing maps. Then it's totally not like a MOBA game. Never mind.
Never mind.
We're gonna have one map for this whole genre. It's got three lanes, river going through it diagonally. F you.
Yep. Totally. One of the last ones for this week would be there's a couple of things. World versus world changes, and I'm going to leave the one I really want to talk about last.
Versus world. World versus world versus world. I
skill
need
point
to.
Challenges have been added to world versus world.
Hey, fix it! Say it again.
That's cool.
So world versus world changes.
World versus world versus world.
Have been added to world versus world. So
versus world.
What having is,
no, no, this isn't something you're going to keep on going with. You're going to fix it, and you're going to say it correctly.
No, this WVW, how about that?
WVWVW.
In WVW.
In WVWVW.
So essentially for the people who wanted from 1 to 80 in World vs. World, which you can do.
Versus World.
Even though I think
it's
a very slow experience. You can have skill point challenges and unlock to because what you get is essentially you get skill point challenges in normal PvP and PvE, and you find the dude out in middleware, and he goes, "Hey, help me with this thing or fight me, and I'll give you your skill point so you can spend that when you're on a new unlock." Because obviously you start with like very few, or I think no utility skills unlocked, and then you're able to unlock them with skill points as you progress and get more skill points by leveling up, I think it was, as well as the skill point challenges. So they're adding them to War vs. World. So to help those guys out who only want to War vs. World, that sounds awesome and potentially really cool if the skill point challenges also do something for your team. That sounds like a great little addition.
So you get free skill all points the more in reason, PvP.
All the more reason for me to never ever go into PvE.
Wait, so what? So they have PvP skill quests.
Pretty much. World vs. World isn't really what I'd consider like a traditional PvP.
Yeah, it's a mishmash of PvE.
That's like really strange, I feel like. You know, you're getting distracted with PvE, basically stuff, during a PvP game.
Well, it's, again, yeah, in World vs. World, it's like, it is a PvP structure, but it's based over 2 weeks, so it's not really like a every moment is fire, even though it ended up that way during the beta. Not every moment is necessarily firing off. Essentially, you can go off and do things for yourself. You can go off and just walk around and explore.
That's quite selfish. That is really selfish.
Yeah, man.
Selfish.
You got to contribute to the war effort.
Right.
At the same time, you can use that server to, like, scout and stuff just by yourself.
Yeah.
Or delay a raiding party.
Yeah. Oh, well, you wouldn't have much luck against. But you could definitely go, oh, whoa, they're totally sneaking out these siege golems around this flank. Let's totally tell our team. And stuff like that will happen. Like, it'll definitely happen. People will find other people doing crazy shit in the area because they're walking around doing stuff. But yeah, this is essentially another reason to like and stay in World vs. World, and I'm totally supportive of that. I'm going around the table. Tarkin, what do you like? What do you think?
It's pretty much just their extension of their idea that you can go to World vs. World straight off the bat and go all the way to AD, everything done, hunky-dory. You don't have to touch PvE at all.
That sounds like the coolest thing. I planned to do it when I first found out about it, and then when I'm playing like the actual World vs. World in the beta, I thought, wait, I'm leveling pretty slowly. And then after that, when we started capturing keeps and stuff, I was like wait, you can actually level pretty quickly if you do the actual objectives. So that plus this, like actually, if they make the skill challenges interesting rather than just fight me, blah, blah, blah. If skill challenges are like, hey, do this for your team and perhaps get everyone a passive benefit of some form, but also get yourself a skill point, that sounds freaking cool. Like, that's how I'm assuming they're going to do it. Because it'd be stupid. Like, as I agree with Noob, if these stuff are just purely selfish, just a dude say in the middle of nowhere, you fight him and you get a skill point, then it's one thing. But if it adds to your team, this could be really cool. Morrison, what are your thoughts?
Well, like I just said, I mean, it's another reason for me to never, ever touch PvE.
Did you like PvE, though? Did you? Or did
I,
you?
I did like it. I don't know what I'm saying. There's too much stuff to this game. I'm gonna have a hard time, I think, figuring out, like, what do I feel like doing?
And for me, it's just gonna be like, huh, do I have to do anything other than World vs. World today? I don't know. No, I'll just do World vs. World. That's how it's gonna be for me. That works.
And
so, yeah, I actually think that's really cool. I can't wait for them to put that in, and that sounds awesome. Another one, after the revelation that you can build teleporters in your keeps by paying money, or gold, that is, World vs. World travel is now free.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
So, like, clearly ArenaNet has been listening to our podcast and, you know, the deliberations here, and they've made a firm decision.
Yeah.
So, you know what, ArenaNet? Totally. So, please optimize the game for my computer so I don't get blue screens anymore. I will be posting my computer specs. And if you just want to send me a new computer, I'm fine with that too.
I'll just take a beta invite.
A rare mini pet from my Guild Wars 1 account. Thank you.
So Wait, so there are positives and negatives to this. World vs. World Travel being free, on the one hand, is awesome because it's assuming your guild has got their shit together and is building those teleporters. You can get everywhere quickly, so you can respond to events really quickly, which is great.
No, you can't, actually.
Really?
Because if they start attacking the keep that has...
It becomes contested. You can't travel there. But if it's close enough or you've built one, yeah, then you have a clear advantage.
If
once you're organized
well enough, then yeah, you can.
If you're organized, then that is a total win for you.
Exactly. Like if you're somewhere on the blue camp, and something's happening over in green camp, then you need to have a way to get there quickly.
Right.
Even if it's right, like not the exact keep they're attacking, this is still better than paying like a silver to get there from a normal teleporter instead of the big Asura gates.
I hope there's like a cooldown or something so people aren't going back and forth really quickly just by building a lot of teleporters.
Yes, yeah, so that's the alternative. It could remove the size and the grandeur of World versus World to some extent.
Right.
If it's far better, because traveling is currently a couple of copper or a silver depending on how far you're going.
Dirt cheap. That's dirt cheap.
That is dirt cheap.
Like, once you're playing the game long enough, that would literally be dirt cheap. I don't think anyone would ever have trouble like paying for waypoints in Guild Wars.
I don't know how the economy is going to go down. I think a silver, to me, because I'm a person who never really focuses on building any form of like character wealth. I definitely am a PvP guy, so I'm frequently very poor.
I had 50 silver by the end of the beta.
I had 3.
No, here's the thing.
If invest you don't have in Facebook
money,
stocks.
If you don't have enough money the waypoint, it's free.
Yeah. I think only if you die.
Yeah, only if you die.
Yeah.
If you're dead and you don't have enough money, it's free.
Yeah, it's free. Right. But if you're alive and you're just going there to, for example, respond to an event, then it at the moment, it being paid is like a distractor. It's like, oh, should I walk there or should I...
Quite clearly, you have to go suicide and then go...
With your broken armor.
Just optimize the hell out of it.
It's a strategic way.
Strategic suicide.
All right. So it just sounds like basically they're evening things out. Since, like I said, if you're poor and, well, you're broke and you can't afford it, it'll still let you teleport around for free. Yeah. Now they're just basically going, all right, you know what? We shouldn't punish people who have money. Vote Ron Paul. Let's just go ahead and do this.
There's also the other aspect that you have to build it first. That takes time. Right.
Yeah,
I don't
know
how long it's going to take, but it's going to take at least a couple of hours.
But there's already
I think there's already enough gold sinks in World v. World that travel time, you can remove that. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Really, I feel like they should make it more expensive to discourage people from teleporting unless they really need to.
That's the other side of the argument I was getting into. For example, if it is like a silver to go from blue world to green world to a specific place in that. I think that's what it currently is.
No, don't do that, please.
All right, some of us in the Guild Wars 1% have no problem paying a fee to move around. If you want to be those poor 99% in Guild Wars.
The problem I have with that is it would mean time between me not having fun and actually having fun. For me, I want to get into the fight. I want to actually start having fun.
That's why I think they should add gold rewards to PvP in World versus World. Like, you would get gold from... They do?
Yeah, you do.
I don't see the problem here. I do not see the problem
here. No, the issue I'm raising is if they completely remove the reason to walk places...
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, they should totally do that. Like, I'd make it more expensive. So people need to pay lots of money.
Oh, so Noob's saying they should be more expensive, and Rawson thinks they should be cheaper and zero maybe. I'm actually on the fence. I'm leaning towards Rawson, to be honest.
Oh,
I think it should be. I love the idea of keeping the fun up, because you don't want to be bored. Like, you're playing a video game. You don't want to spend time in a video game walking places and not having fun. I agree.
But if everyone just teleports around, I feel like that loses a big chunk of the gameplay. If most of the combat is centralized in these flashpoints and not all around the map.
That's the thing. So if everyone is just bamfing places, then you'll never have like the random occurrences right. in the middle of the map. That's what I was getting into. Finally, I get there. Like, for example, you won't be, hey, let's just see how this Dolyak's going because I'm walking that direction anyway. And suddenly people
not really. Gear. I mean, you're still going to have to go from fort to event or from event to fort or from fort to fort.
That's true.
So yeah. you're still going to be running through all the areas in between them. It's just now there's not going to be that big long run back when you die.
You're somewhat correct because if you look at the world versus world maps, it's not like it's like imagine a diamond. It's not like from the points of the diamond, there's nothing in the middle. It's actually quite dense. There's actually places maybe at every segment of the diamond, there's the three, and in the middle there's a bunch like four or five. There's actually quite a few. Places like, for example, if you're going from one fort to another, you're probably going to pass like people walking at different direction on the way because it's quite dense. People are moving around pretty much every which way at all times at the moment.
The game is already against the concept of a death penalty, so the way I see it, at least in Worldview World, is the whole paying money for having to get back into the fight is essentially a death penalty, or at least the run back. Like, if I don't want to pay it and I just run back, that alone is another form of penalty. And I don't think really that's like the idea that they're going for.
What's that saying? Losers are beggars. Losers can't be beggars.
Losers can't be choosers?
Losers can't be choosers. Whatever. Yeah. So suck it. Beggars suck it, loser.
Yes, but people have adapted it. And if they haven't, we just did.
But what they can do is make... travel free, but the creation of a surrogate or like waypoints costs money, and those waypoints will disappear in like 30 minutes.
Oh, so you're thinking temporary waypoints.
Right, temporary waypoints, but that costs money, but they're also free to go in for the rest of your team.
But they're already
If I vaguely recall, Ion used a similar system, and Ion had terrible PvP, so...
you can't blame all of its terrible PvP on that system.
I guess, but as far as how the system worked, you got killed by a level 50 over and over, and that's how the system worked.
No, but like, what was the actual context of their time-limited teleporting?
It wasn't. I don't think it was time limited, but basically they had these respawn points that you could actually buy and then drop, and people on your side could use it and set that as their respawn point.
Okay, so yeah, somewhat similar. So yeah, the Tarkin's perhaps adding a little bit more of a twist to it in saying that. Oh, was it Tarkin? Anyway, in saying that once you drop one of those, they only last for so long. And then you may have to drop another one, for example.
It may have been time limited. I forget. It's been a while. In this case, I like to forget Ion.
But in this case, I think it's like a bit of it's an interesting concept. I'm not sure if it's a particularly good concept, but one the counterpoint is a lot of those places will be automatic. It'll happen by itself, like because either it'll be contested or the keep will be taken over. In which case, everything existing in the keep is instantly wiped out anyway. Those aren't going to be permanent fixtures. Like they're already going to be time limited because of the gameplay, rather than a artificially implemented system. I think, for me at least, during the beta, everything changed hands so many times so quickly that the fact that there wasn't a teleporter in like the main keeps and stuff was an indication of just how quickly those things can change over. And if people actually do start investing and putting those up as fast as they can, the fact that they'll be taken so quickly or so easily or so suddenly does kind of self-balance, if you get my meaning.
I understand that. Like, if you put a waypoint straight after you've taken a keep, that's time not being... not building up the defenses.
Yeah.
Or
like just resources else. Not put
to
work. But
that's also time where you'll be able to bring in people that have died defending the keep or taking the keep and then bringing them back into the keep in case there's a counterattack. That could be possible with building a waypoint.
Well, or I think not work that way. No, without a question, the waypoint would be the number one thing you drop in a keep as soon as you take it.
Right.
Just without a question. Because, for example, if you don't have one there, then it'll be a 3-minute walk for people to get there to defend it straight up. As opposed to, like, that's if you put a waypoint in the really close keep, the closest keep. If you didn't do that one either, then it's going to be a 10-minute walk and so on and so forth. So.
And with those, like, if you could build the waypoints, and then if you, let's say you take a keep that the enemy team has built a waypoint in, you should be able to go through that waypoint into the enemy side. That'd be pretty cool. Right. Would that be just terrible for everyone? I don't know. I've never played PvP.
Anyway, we move on to the next topic, and I think this one's the last one. Let me just make sure. Yep.
Show me the pantsuit.
To me, I'm not sure if it's the biggest discussion case, but to me it's the most interesting of the lot. Only 5 unique combatants can combo into a given combo field now, which I think is crazy.
What is a combo field?
Okay. So,
have you ever eaten a combo?
So I don't know what a combo field is. We haven't fully outlined it on this podcast before. It's good to go into it. So essentially, every class has their skills, right? So essentially, you have your 10 skills, utility skills, so on and so forth, weapon skills. Skills themselves have different types, and in many cases, they can be part of a combo. So, for example, a wall of flame that an elementalist can put down is a combo starter. It's combo field. That's right. So essentially, that is one instance of a combo field in that if other things which can continue the combo interact with it, they change their effects. So what that means is you have the combo field. So in this case, the wall of fire, and then you have something that can continue the combo would be a barrage from a ranger or something from a ranger which fires through that field, and now you have arrows on fire, right?
Yep.
You've heard this before, I think.
They showed that off.
That sounds really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So wait, you didn't notice this in the game?
Nope. Well, I guess I didn't play any PvP, so I never ran into that.
You also see it in a lot of like bigger. Well, we'll go into that in a second because I want to see how this. I want to talk about this little effect, bigger dynamic events. But essentially, yeah, you have skills have a status. So I believe they're combo field, combo finisher, and there's the one between. That's like a.
I've forgotten what it was.
But yeah, the one that's part of a combo but doesn't finish it. A finisher would have a bigger effect because it's literally finishing the combo. But at the same time, those are usually things like ground stomps and stuff like that make a big explosive effect. But like smaller things like firing through a field would trigger things like when you see the damage number, it has like I think combo next to the damage. Or it's like a different color or something.
No, it says combo.
Yeah, it says combo. And so they're trying to... I think a lot of people didn't notice it because they're trying to make it a very like subtle effect. Like it shouldn't be... Like they're already having problems with everything being everywhere at all times. They want to have it a very subtle effect so you know that you're comboing. But yeah, there's definitely many possibilities. I think every class... I think there's like thousands of possibilities for what you can do in terms of combos when combining all the classes. So... In this case, the change they've made to the game with this beta leak, this patch leak, was only 5 combatants can use a combo field. So, for example, if an elementalist throws down a wall of flame, only 5 people can have their shit affected by it. So I'll let that sink in, and I'll talk to the guy who knows what I'm talking about. Tarkin, what is your thoughts?
I find that 5 is actually a bit optimistic. Most of the time, I've found no more than about 2 or 3 people actually comboing properly.
Right. Well, I think that's
this is in a group of like accurate. 20, 30 people, so
that's probably pretty accurate, actually. To be
so,
honest,
yeah, I've never ran into it. So
let's say you scale that up into World vs. World, you've got like 60 people at once.
Yeah,
you're probably still not hitting the 5 unique per field.
Would you say that was because there were too many fields, or because a lot of people just didn't notice?
Yeah,
people just weren't in the close enough to use their abilities to combo.
Okay.
Usually.
Right.
And here's the thing. Like, it also prevents, like, too many people comboing from the same field.
Yeah, exactly. For me, I found it that in War vs. World, at least, there were too many fields, so you never had any reaching the what this would be a maximum. You'd have so many elementalists at play laying down shit all over the place, or just like people who didn't even know what they were doing was a combo field. Like, for example, a Mesmer's Chaos Storm is a combo field, and I think when you shoot through it, the opponent gets a random status effect. They didn't even notice that was a field. So there were so many fields going down that there was never really a case of people bunching up around any specific one to really optimize or really capitalize upon its effects. So I guess Tarkin's pretty much right, especially, and again, in War vs. World, or definitely some of the bigger dynamic events, everyone would be everywhere, so everyone would be so spread out that you would have a case of perhaps no one ever really reaching the maximum of five. But I always loved the idea, to get back onto topic, was, if there was a maximum of five on a combo field, then I always loved the idea, if there wasn't a maximum of, like, say, maybe two elementalists laying down a huge wall of fire, and then there being a shitload of rangers and warriors behind it, and then just all of them firing through it. Just like literally a line like, what would you call it, imperialist England line of fire shit going down. That's what I always imagined.
Imperialist England?
Yeah, with the whole, like, regimented... You know, when
like,
they were
like Napoleonic Wars for yeah. Mountain Blade.
Exactly.
God, that's a great mod. Anyway.
When England was an empire. When the British... Anyway, I don't know enough by history. I know enough by history to be accurate.
Imperialistic here, so gonna, England. Right,
I'm okay. going to leave it.
Oh, you know what? Right. Okay. There you go.
There you go. So it's actually lines of fire and stuff. I wanted that to happen. I didn't see it happening. And in this case, I don't think it can happen.
I feel I feel like it could happen when you're in small groups with people you're on in like a guild and you're using Mumble, and that could turn out really well, especially in structured PvP, I guess.
Well, that could be a thing, definitely. Some of the effects, especially like the random negative status effect, those could be actually really beneficial if you have enough people who capitalize them and realize that they're there. Like, for example, a warrior using Volley, which is four unique shots in the one skill, would essentially be able to stack four random status effects on a person if they were filing through one of those fields, which is incredibly powerful if you think about it, especially since some of them stack duration and some of them stack damage. Like, for example, I think it was fire or burning stacks duration and bleeding stacks damage. So if you get those two on someone, including the natural bleeding, if, for example, if you have a weapon that naturally bleeds or something along those lines, if they put effects like that in, you can make some crazy shit happen. Using combo effect fields, especially that specific Mesmer one. So this limit of five, I guess, kind of helps. Because in structured, obviously, you're working with five people. So you'd never hit this limit. You'd have a limit of four or whatever it would be.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they specifically put this limit in due to stuff they may have observed during World v. World.
Yeah, World v. World.
Because, obviously, you know, in competitive, it's five people anyway, so it doesn't matter. And in PvE, it's kind of like, who cares?
Everyone's just having fun, whatever.
Well, yeah, it's like, don't fuck around with people's fun in PvE. That's kind of what I've... would say. But yeah, I think in World v. World, there was probably some instances going on of players basically going, like, dropping down a field specifically so to have a shit ton of people behind it all use the combo at once and get effects from that.
I guess imagine that, like, straight up, if enemies are on the ramparts, one Mesmer throws down a single Chaos Storm and five warriors each pick off their own enemy, you'd quickly destroy them. Not even including the warrior's natural damage output. Just the amount of status effects he'd be pumping out would be crazy. So, yeah, I guess you're right. I still wish it was a thing, though. I wish you could have 40 dudes firing through, like, two Chaos Fields and just going crazy. But,
Would you like to play the Napoleonic Wars mod?
Well, the thing is, you can still get it on a smaller scale. You just have to rebalance the ratio of Mesmers and...
Exactly. And then people... I guess. I, to some extent, I can see how this would increase the amount of interdependence between people, which is always a good thing, in my opinion, in PvP. But just to get like overall opinions of this, because I think we just kind of talked over one another for about 5 minutes there, Tarkin, what are your thoughts?
Unless it's like a really massive battle, I don't see the change being a big, making a big difference. So yeah, I'd say it was balanced around like massive dynamic events or world mm-hmm. versus world, just taking advantage of too many effects at once.
Yeah, and I actually just remembered this. What if it's actually a engine thing? I'm not sure if this would be accurate, but it sounds like this could be the case. If they're tracking every single combo effect field and every possible instance of a projectile moving through multiple combo effect fields on its way to a target, because that can definitely happen, I've seen it happen. If that's all being calculated by the engine, then putting a 5-person maximum could significantly improve performance. So it could just be something that simple.
Possibly.
I mean, yeah. That reminds me of Guild Wars 1. Protective Bond crashing their server. Because it had an infinite loop.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And I bet you can do something similar with the current system. And also, you'd have that effect, for example, if they laid out 4 combo effect fields and a single ranger on one side pumping out everything he can, this would limit stacking that up to 20 rangers or whatever, because obviously limiting it to 5 per combo effect field makes it very much more difficult to stack combo effect fields, if that's even possible, which I'm not sure if it is. But it sounds like a cool thing. They should totally put that in. Anyway, Rawson, what are your overall thoughts?
Well, I think I already said what my thoughts were, basically.
Yet,
I
just think the overall, just to end the topic.
Hey, just kind of a world v. world style nerf to prevent people from basically doing that whole line regiment thing. Yeah. And you bring up a good point that it may be due to simply performance issues. Yeah. They may be trying that. They could also just completely get rid of it. I mean, this is still a beta. They're still testing out various little gameplay elements.
Yeah, they could go back on this. It's not already a thing. But I think that this is actually probably... Considering the arguments raised here, I think this is probably a pretty decent change in... my opinion now, at least. Noob, what are your overall thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's no longer just, someone laid something down, so everyone spam something. It makes people, I guess, think more about what they're using and try to actually pull off a combo.
Yeah,
so,
right, yeah.
And it definitely, I feel like, is a lot more useful and more strategic in smaller PvP combat or a PvE boss fight. I feel like that's where it would be used a lot. Be like, all right, you laid down the fire or something, and I'll use this. And then someone messes up, and then everyone starts swearing, and then someone rage quits. And that's the fun everyone wants to have.
And before we move on to the limited listener feedback, I think the actual listener is actually on this podcast today. So it's not really, it doesn't really count. So feedback in general from people who are on the podcast. I guess we should call that segment. I think there was one here that I missed. They put in a ownership over siege weapons in World versus World. So now if you throw down a catapult or whatever, what happens is you start the building then with your plans, which you paid for, and then everyone runs up and puts in their own supply, and then anyone can use it. They put in an ownership thing.
Good. Yeah, that's a better idea.
So essentially the person actually put down the plans, and I think, I assume it would extend to people who put in supply, because they're probably, or maybe it's just the person who put in the plans, because it's a simpler system. He can come in whenever he wants and go, okay, now I want to use it now. But aside from that, if he doesn't want to, or if he's dead, then obviously anyone can use it. But he can actually have priority and go, yeah, it's mine. Thank you, guys, but no, I want to use it. Which I think is good. Thoughts? Noob?
It would probably be bad if someone builds it and then just disappears.
Yeah.
Well, that would be pretty useless. Use it.
Other people can still use it.
Oh, once they leave? Oh, he just has priority. No, okay.
In general, yeah, it's just priority. Right. It's not only his now.
Okay.
Yeah, which is good. Like, which is what you want.
Yeah, because definitely.
The punishable problem you just brought up.
I wouldn't want some asshole hopping on my damn siege whatever. It's mine.
That's my battering ram. That's my
battering ram, yeah. Mine.
Rawson?
I think it's a good change overall. Yeah. For the reason that was just brought up. It is kind of a dick thing to drop down something that's needed for a siege and then just fucking leave.
Yeah. Or at the moment, in this case, it could be kind of lame if for example, someone who could be very much more useful elsewhere, like a guardian, drop down something and then just stuck in it the whole time and just like, haha, I'm a battering ram. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, that's so cool. Constantly be I'm a battering ram.
Meanwhile, everyone behind him is getting owned by ranged attacks, which he could totally help with, but he's just sitting there in the battering ram. So that could
suck. Battering ram.
But aside from that, Tarkin, anything?
No real thoughts on that. It's just, yeah, you have priority, but
so other people can still use it. So it's all, everything's
yeah,
fine.
Other
right?
people still use it. So yeah,
yeah, it's all as well. All as well in this world. So that rounds out our major topic for the day: the leaks. Hopefully, more of these happen because A, they're interesting, and B, they're totally easy podcast fodder. Though surprisingly, I don't think anyone else is really talking about it this week, looking at the other podcasts out there. Anyway, I think we'll move on to the fake listener feedback, which isn't really listener feedback because he's
Hi.
Here.
Hi, everyone. Let's Turkey. Have a question about... you know what? I was going to say something really gross, but I'm going to refrain from that. So continue, Tarkin, please.
Yeah, so you had some notes on what we were talking about last week regarding the real money being able to be used for World versus World. I think we said that, me particularly, I was quite vehement about you shouldn't be able to pay real money for benefits in World versus World because that's what... Real money transfers to gems. Gems can be transferred for gold, and gold is what's spent on plans to create siege engines and so on and so forth for War versus World. And that was my big thing. I hated the fact that, for example, if a guild got together, pooled up money, they can essentially dominate War versus World for ages and ages because they can make infinite siege golems, for example, and just absolutely take everything on the map. So,
right, but the fact that they'd be spending hundreds of dollars on guild wars.
They wouldn't.
Let them.
Some people would. Some people would spend like $1,000.
That's true.
Yeah.
Thing is, we are basing our thoughts on what is obviously beta.
Right.
Yeah, first of all, the pricing of the blueprints are actually pretty cheap. They're in the silver range.
So they go from silver to gold. The siege gold on the thing is like 10 gold.
Yes, but that's something that you can like get up over time, like maybe 3 days of work in World versus World.
Yeah. I guess.
Less time in PvE if you're high up.
Yeah, we don't quite know how the gold is actually going to scale towards the end game.
How does
it
work? The instant they put in a bronze, silver, gold system made me think that they were trying to copy WoW, for example. How does it work? How long does it take to build up gold in WoW? Rawson, did you play much WoW? I didn't play, so that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I played back at release when gold was, you know, kind of a big deal, but now it doesn't mean much now. I mean, the actual gold, silver, copper
how was
dynamic.
It at release? Because obviously they can change it, but for at release, how was it like?
At release, I think it was like, it was either 40 gold or maybe it was 100 gold to get a mount. At level 40 for a plus 60% speed bonus. And that was like the first big gold sink in that game. And goddamn, I remember playing and just saving up for a few days, actually, in order to afford myself a mount.
Wow.
And then
I'm guessing that's like a tormented weapon in Guild Wars terms. Something like that. Like one arm brace.
Well, yeah, but you didn't really get much mechanical advantage for a tormented brace. Anything
but it
tormented.
Looked damn cool. No, it didn't. Looked pretty damn ugly, but it's on the whole.
It depends
hall
on the class. Some of them were pretty cool.
Scythe looked okay, I guess.
But, in this case, it would be an actual like mechanical advantage. You get a 60% speed boost.
Oh, no, the biggest gold sink in Guild Wars was obsidian armor, probably.
Yes.
And
but,
obsidian
back to
armor.
Rawson.
Just because they call it gold, silver, and copper, that's just something to at least make it more familiar to other players. In terms of how much they actually gain, of course, that's all determined by and large by how ArenaNet keeps up their flow throughout the game.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to say.
Definitely coming from Diablo 3. I guess we can all, you and me can definitely talk about it in some depth. And the gold sinks in Diablo 3 are effing massive. They are huge.
Yeah.
Like for example, getting a
and
second
then the crafting.
Tab on your storage is 100,000 gold.
Yep.
100,000. That takes forever to save up, and that's not including the.
Not so much on hell difficulty, actually. No, but going through it takes over 20 hours.
It takes over 20 hours.
Because you have to what I'm saying is on hell difficulty, going through Act 1, I earned about 80 to 90,000 gold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I did that on Nightmare. Yeah. I think I got 60,000 on Nightmare. But the fact is, you have to get there in the first place. You have to finish the game, which is about 15 to 20 hours. Depending on how you play it, or 10 if you really rush it through. And then you have to beat another act on the higher difficulty. Once you get past normal...
Just make a game name that says Rush, please.
Well, people are actually paying for... I think it's like $10 now, if you pay attention to the local and how much it takes to rush to 60. Anyway, but beyond that, that's not even including the 40... No, 10 times 4. So yeah, 40k that it takes to expand your storage to fill it the first tab in the first place. I didn't even know if you get a filled second tab or you have to fill that as well. Then you have the jeweler upgrades and you have the weaponsmith upgrades. And those
Who the hell should do that?
Jeweler, as we were discussing before the podcast, jeweler is totally worth it once you get up to beyond perfect squares. Okay. So if you want to make a star, for example, it's far cheaper to upgrade your... Actually, I shouldn't be saying this because I want to keep my profit margins up by selling stars on the auction house. Anyway, quickly moving on.
So you're saying that's a good solid way to for me to make some profit.
Well, the highest thing that drops in that game, I think, was a... it's the one above the normal square. It's the square with the outline around it. I think that's perfect. Mm-hmm. That's the highest thing that drops in the game. So those are flawless. That's a flawless
square. Why are we talking about Diablo 3?
to annoy you. Like, to be honest, I'm just doing it to annoy you.
All right, I'll see you guys. Good night. Thank you for being here.
So yeah, back on point. It's a thing. Like, people spend money to get... I guess the pan's only about 10 gold. It obviously, as Rosson was saying, it does depend on how that economy pans out. Like, I have no idea if you only start earning gold easily by level at the end of the game, like maybe level 70 to 80. At the moment, as I said, I had 3 silver by the end of the beta, but I was probably a fringe case. How much silver? So new pad about 50, so that's half 1 gold, I think. And Tarkin, how much gold, silver did you have or gold did you have by the end of the beta?
I had about 30, but I like had maxed out equipment just to make sure that I was ready for any situation.
Yeah,
I was only level 21.
Yeah, but that was after like what, at least 20 hours of play, because we both played at least 20 hours that weekend.
Yeah, that was about 20 hours of play. So
yeah. That's 20 hours for 30 gold, 30 silver, and that's not even 1 gold.
But
and I had
it definitely. I would feel it gets faster as you level. Of course,
it does. It increases gold as you collect.
Yeah,
but this doesn't. That's not saying anything about the initial 20 hours. Like for us, maybe that was not a big deal because we're willing to put that much time into Guild Wars on a weekend. But 20 hours is a lot for a lot of people. Most games nowadays are only 6 hours. To put that in perspective, and this is before you even started getting gold easily in Guild Wars 2. 20 hours off the bat. So I don't know, dude. I think it's a lot to say that 10 gold like, for a siege golem is
I was looking around in Divinity's Reach and there are these vendors that sell like late game items for karma. I think one of the items was around 92,000 karma.
Whoa.
And each quest at our level gives you around 100.
100.
And that was for like level 60 gear, not level 80 gear. Level 80 gear was in the hundreds of thousands, I remember.
Jesus. Well, that means that, yeah, it escalates kind of quickly. So yeah, there you go.
I'm assuming. Or you literally just play for hundreds of hours, getting 100 karma.
Actually, I think I'm wrong. I think it's trebuchets that's 10 gold and a siege golem's 1. Anyway, some amount of gold for the highest level thing, which is obviously the one you can spam if you're investing your money. So yeah, that's the thing. Like, how much will a gem trade for? Would it trade for silver? Would it trade for gold? How much would the Chinese people sell gold for? I don't know. You never know until the actual game comes out. But Tarkin, so your general thing, I think that your biggest case was the time limitation of World vs. World. What was your argument there?
Oh, the fact that it was 2 weeks. In that, so the effect of money on a single battle would not be so dramatic.
Yeah, I guess
they'd have
saying
to constantly be spending money to ensure that they had a constant advantage.
Agreed. But for example, because obviously War of the World, what they're doing is some they haven't implemented in the beta weekend event, but it's a matchmaking system. So essentially, eventually you get to the point where the really top tier guilds will start fighting the really top tier guilds and or servers. So for example, hopefully Yaxaben will be amongst the top couple. That means we'll be there against guys who are fully intending to win. And if it's anything like the first Guild Wars, at least some benefits will be attributed to the guys who are winning.
Right,
overall.
But it's not like we're the only guild on our world. There's plenty of other guilds. I'm sure in each side there will be enough either not paying or paying.
Wouldn't it be
out.
Better if that there wasn't even an argument? Like if they didn't wasn't even a possibility to pay real money to win? Like really?
I honestly feel like the amount money won't make a difference. It might make a difference battle to battle, but not in the overall world versus world versus world game.
I guess. Tarkin's argument is valid that it is only 2 week stretches. Even if people are spending money, it'll only be effective for 2 weeks. For example, if you are fighting against one server and everyone on there is spending money to win, eventually after the 2 weeks, you'll probably be matched against a different server because obviously these guys have won and moved on. But I don't know. For me, it's not a valid enough argument because I think the most poignant argument that Tarkin put forward, not to put words in your mouth now, but you can agree with me or not, I think the most poignant one you put forward was World vs. World is intended to be semi-unbalanced. Like they know that it's not going to really be the most balanced event, and perhaps they're pretty fine with it being having a couple of these loopholes. Was that kind of what you're leaning towards, Dirk?
Yeah, the fact that you're never going to be completely balanced because the two sides will never have like the exact same numbers, the exact same skill.
Yeah.
Then there's the fact that they might put in like a siege weapon limit on each side.
Oh yeah. Well, hopefully that becomes like obviously if. They'll have to adapt it as the game comes out and the meta is established. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right in two cases. Yes, we will be on beta. We're still only commenting what we found the betas. And obviously from what we just showed in the first half of this episode with people with us talking about the patch notes, things are still changing. They're obviously putting stuff in and things are just going to get worse as they go on. And perhaps they will put a siege engine limit on guilds, which obviously diminish the meta. I actually think that's a great... Because what we talked about last time, I think... was having a... I forgot what it was. Moving on quickly then. I think that the siege engine limit on a guild or on a server is a great idea. I think saying, hey, you can only have 500 siege engines at a time for the entire server. So in one world of the world versus world. Are you happy, dude? So essentially... That could have a situation where people go, okay, we're going to spec towards siege golems because we can move them around more quickly and silently and get them places and be more stealthy. Or is other people going, no, we're going to spec into trebuchets and get as much of those up as possible. as much of those plans as possible. So when we need to throw down, then we'll have like multiple trebuchets to kick ass with. That could be really cool. Maybe 500 is too big a number, but yeah,
I don't like that idea at all.
Really? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the problem is now it sounds like a nice idea, but you're forgetting the fact that you're going to be playing this with random people on the internet, and random people on the internet are going to go, "No, buy trebuchets! Everyone buy a trebuchet! You're stupid! I'm going to put all my money into trebuchets, because trebuchets hurt the mostest!" And you're going to fucking lose, and then the guy will be like, "Yeah, we lost because we didn't buy more trebuchets! Trebuchets all the time!"
If someone could keep that up for 2 weeks straight...
I want to change our economy over to the trebuchet standard! Vote Trebuchet Paul 2012! So you'd run into problems like that.
I guess.
If someone could keep that up for 2 weeks straight, that's just going to be ridiculous. I would give that person a medal.
That should be a YouTube. We should get Rawson on YouTube.
Right.
Moving from that to his Kermit voice and doing the entire thing, just like continually fluently.
Yeah, Kermit.
I guess that's an issue. And if it's a high number, like 500, it wouldn't be so much of an issue. It would just stop people from making too many. But if it's a low number, like 30, then it'd definitely be an issue. It really depends, but it's still better than having like no holds barred, making as many siege golems as you want. Maybe 1,000. Imagine 1,000 siege golems. That's impossible because only 500 people.
I am. It's making me wet.
Too much information. way too much. But yeah, you can only have 500 people per server, so you couldn't have 1,000 siege golems. But maybe like 100 siege golems at once, backed up by like 200 battering rams and trebuchets. That could be a force to never be touched, really. And that would also, I think, the limit on how many a server could have could also remove a lot of the time investment. So if people who are spending thousands of hours in Guild Wars 2 are capable of putting up a shitload of siege engines because I have that much gold, that could be quite lame for the guilds who don't have that, or servers who are a bit less active. And having limits like that could help that out. Thoughts? Rossum?
I'm sorry?
Do you want me to go from the start? I can go from the start.
God, pay attention to what's going on.
What was the question?
Having a limit could limit the amount. So having a siege engine limit per server could limit the amount of advantage a server with more activity has because they have less latent gold. So have more latent gold than a server less activity. So the one with less activity can be just as competitive because the one with more activity can't have too many of any particular siege engine, for example.
That sounds incredibly speculative.
Yeah, that's true. I'll concede that.
Anyway. It's another one of those things where I'm kind of being like, I think it's a bit too early today.
But speculation is what things are built. I love speculation. Speculation is my favorite thing in the world. So. All right, and with that, I think, Tarkin, do you have anything else to add?
Well, just going on with the all-in attack, the defending side could easily use that, take the hit, lose the whatever the
defending, that's and true.
Attack something else.
Yeah. Just whatever.
If it's such an all-in attack, they could easily hit the supply lines and prevent the attack from happening ever again.
Dude, what was the best thing ever? The fact that we can ever have that conversation is so awesome to me. But yeah, so with that, I think that's pretty much all we have to talk about.
Wait. Let's talk about why they should add a guild versus guild. Why is there no guild versus guild PvP?
Why is the guild versus guild? What the hell?
Right. I know because you know everyone on the ArenaNet team listens to this podcast. Just want to know. Just want to tell you guys, add guild versus guild, please.
I agree.
Why? I don't know why there isn't any guild combat. That's something that should be in like a game called Guild Wars.
I know.
Well, there's the whole tournament thing.
But that is, there is, but it's not the same. Guild.
That's more like a TA kind of system, team readers kind of system, where
which they also like, removed in the
original. How the tournament thing, like we didn't go into it that deeply, but when we're going back to where we're talking about how they added a automatic matchmaking system for tournaments to happen in 5v5 structured PvP. What they're intending it for it to be is for there to be a ranked kind of tournament system, even beyond that. So essentially, you have pre-existing teams of a bunch of dudes. Many PvP teams, and them to be essentially being put into a proper style tournament. So you can't have sub outs, that kind of stuff. Or you can have maybe one sub. I don't know how that's going to work, but it's essentially going to be a huge actual whole HA kind of style. So it's Heroes Ascent kind of style tournament system, where you do have a winner at the end and all the teams being set. So something more like a professional video game tournament rather than just a on-the-fly automatic tournament system. That's what they're planning to do. So the fact that they think that's cool is fine by me, but I believe they're giving off the vibe that that's somewhat replacing GVG for now. It's not the same. Even though those teams of five could be a guild team of five, it's still A, only five people, and B, not like even remotely the same because what's it called? And this one, structured PvP, isn't the same as Wolf as Guild versus Guild because of the things like ever-changing battlefields, home battlefields, stuff like that. It just isn't existent here. But we've said all this before. I think we should end this podcast because this is going. This could go nowhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks for everyone joining in. I'll let everyone sign off. Nubarama, do you have anything to plug?
I'd like to, again, plug my original Guild Wars account. This is Brohan Solo asking for any donations of 80 gold or a green mini pet. Thank you. Hey.
Or
a brand new computer that will no longer blue screen in Guild Wars. I'm fine with that. Like, Rawson, that's not that much. That's like a couple thousand dollars.
Rawson, save me.
You can send me a private message on Giant Bomb.
Damn it!
And tell me, no, hang on, and tell me how the hell to have fun in Dragon's Dogma, because I'm kind of at a loss.
Damn! Nice turnaround there. I like it. Tarkin, do you have anything to plug?
Plug nothing, my Guild Wars really. Character.
No, if you, I will if you not don't know plug anything, your Guild Wars character.
If you have nothing to plug,
if anything, I will plug my own characters, but I am not that. I am not so low to do that.
So this is SelfQuest Cynic. I'm going to thank anyone who's joined us from, I think it was Guild Wars 2 Guru, because we got clearance to post there.
No way. How long do you think we'll last before we get complaints of like terribleness?
And those who've subscribed on iTunes, because actually quite a few of you, and I'm surprised that we found anyone. So yeah, welcome to you guys.
How many subscribers do we have?
At minimum, 100 Five. Uniques.
Ooh.
At minimum, how much I could track, and our tracking system isn't very good. Which is kind of cool. Like, way more than like the actual subscribers, not like people downloading one or two episodes. It's kind of crazy. Wow. So yeah, welcome to those guys. Welcome to anyone new from Guild Wars 2 Guru, and you can follow us on Twitter.
You think they would listen all the way to the end like this?
Well, that's why this is here. Because if they didn't, then no welcome for them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, fuck you, asshole.
Fuck you, assholes. So yeah. At the Lincoln Cast on Twitter, and I'm also thelincolncast@gmail.com if you have any response, or you can just post in the threads at Giant Bomb or Guild Wars 2 Guru. So thanks for your time. Signing off. This is Selfquest Cynic. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. I love you.
Goodbye.
I'm going to stop recording there. Oh, good. Yeah, it's working.
Woo!
So are you still looking at weird hentai stuff?
Cat girl maid outfit, size large.
Oh.
I must be missing something, but what makes that funny?
That, I'm happy that you don't know what he just talked about. I'm really happy. Hey. So Rawson and Noob have been going down a dark hole of hentai references for the last 10 minutes. Pretty much since you left.
Yeah, I did come in, but it's just like, yeah.
Wait, where are you browsing, Morrison?
I'm just going through J-List.
Would you wear this hat? I feel like if I saw someone on the street wear this hat, I'd point and laugh.
What is J-List?
It's
just like Craigslist for
Japanese goods.
Alright.
No, it's crazy. Just like an import.
So everything we've been discussing has been on J-List.
Otaku.
Would you wear... If I saw someone at school wearing this hat, I'd beat the fuck out of them.
No, you wouldn't. You're a little girl.
I'd literally just be like, are you... I don't know.
You talk to them in a demeaning manner.
I work at a school, and I would have to think really hard and just resist the urge to beat them up.
Wait, you work at a school?
Yeah. I know, it's fucking crazy. Well, a college, but whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's different. That's different.
I don't think they'll let me on school.
Well, you wouldn't be able to get the references.
Why would anyone be proud to be an otaku?
I don't know.
If they understand enough Japanese, then they should also realize that otaku is a demeaning term in Japan. Yeah, kid.
Exactly.
Yo, I'm proud nobody likes me.
I'm proud to be a pedophile. I'm a pedophile and I'm proud of it.
No, that's Lolicon, not Otaku.
Wait, aren't one?
Sure, pretty
isn't synonymous. One a subset of the other?
Yeah,
not necessarily, but
I would all assume all Lolicons are Otaku, but not all Otaku are Lolicons.
Yeah, I guess that would be a more fair way to say it. Vaguely.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Anyway. What time is... Okay, it's 11:30. I'm just going to get some water, and then we can start, I guess.
I'll send it back.
Oh, my God. I could buy panties.
My mom made me some awesome breakfast, so I'm going to eat that. I'm going to eat that now, before we start. Not particularly awesome breakfast.
Perfumed panties.
You're still on J-List? Come on!
Oh, wow, they got pictures of anime ladies who might be wearing panties. That one, I don't know. Or at least one of them is wearing panties.
Confirmed.
Now this is an interesting article on Slashdot. Are porn and video games ruining a generation?
Yeah.
Oh, is that that
have you just
from
heard
CNN? Voice in
the last hour?
Alright, I'm back.
It's from CNN.
Yeah, it is.
CNN?
Yeah, they have a really terrible knowledge of video games. Let's see. Violence in video games is often synonymous with success. Children with more of a propensity for aggression are more attracted to violent video media, but violent media, in turn, can also make them more aggressive. This could be related to the fact that video games reward players for violent acts, often permitting them to move to the next level in a game.
It's poorly written as well. Sounds like Noob wrote it.
Still, the Slashdot summary's got some hilarious stuff. Response by IGN dissects the idea that pornography and video games are pretty much the same thing. The article by psychologist Philip G. Zimbardo and Nikita Duncan argues that young men are hooked on arousal, sacrificing their schoolwork and relationships in the pursuit of getting a tech-based buzz.
Alright, that's all true. God. That's all true so far.
That's actually probably true.
So far, entirely true.
Sakuma Trot, Grave of the Fireflies, limited edition.
Hey, no, Grave of the Fireflies is a legitimately awesome movie.
I've never seen it.
Isn't that the Studio Ghibli production?
Yeah,
J-List friends, over 3 million members, meet new friends from Japan.
Awesome.
Of course, it would be just...
Is that friends or friends?
Friends. Well, it's like profile of J-List friends members. 8% have a graduate degree. 51% have a undergrad degree. 37% have high school diplomas. Other 2.6%. What is other?
They have no education.
Where's do they high school diploma?
High school students.
Yeah, they're still in high school. They're still in high school.
College? Would that be college?
What?
Oh.
They're still in high school.
Who can I... Oh, God. What is J-List Friends? J-List Friends is a leading global site for meeting attractive people who love Japanese culture. Our member base, over 3 million, includes women from Japan, Hong Kong, Korea, Taiwan, Thailand, and China, as well as Europe and the U.S. They come to J-List Friends to share, flirt, and have fun and form meaningful relationships. Who can I meet on J-List Friends? The average age of our female members is between 25 and 27. That compares favorably with an average age on most U.S. European dating
Except here's one problem. They're in Japan. Fucking Japan.
Yeah, exactly. Over 30% of them have advanced degrees. A very high percentage of them speak more than one language. They can almost all speak in corresponding English. And they are, as a group, very attractive. Jesus Christ.
Oh, wait, were you looking at the adult like corner in JList?
Pop it. 28,000 people on Facebook like JList. I don't want to be seen like JList on Facebook. And I can't imagine most people would.
Let's see.
Oh, there's a lady on JList. Has anyone seen a review for Catgirl Alliance?
Why do people identify themselves as neats? It's just like the saddest thing in the world.
Because if you identify yourself as an otaku, why not just to go ahead and identify yourself as a neat?
Well, an otaku can still hold down a fucking job.
Exactly. Just oh, and I'm just being creepy and looking at profiles of people on JList.
I got a friend who's basically almost essentially a neat. He's my age. He's 24. He's never held down a fucking real job. It's goddamn depressing. All he does, is, as far as I'm aware, is run a Minecraft server all day.
Dude, that sounds like a pretty sweet...
I'm sitting here going like, dude, you gotta do something.
It's like, well, I got some donations for my Minecraft server.
I don't fucking care. You need to do something.
What was like $100,000 in donations? I know it's not. But oh, still... God.
I'm gonna describe this person who likes JList and just imagine what the person looks like. All right, okay. Just do this. I don't know why, but just do it because we have free time. This person lives in Conway, Arkansas. Is from Blytheville, Arkansas. Knows English, Japanese, German, French, Italian, Chinese, Latin, Sindarin, which is the Elven language in Lord of the Rings, and Dwarvish. People who inspire this person. James Madison, Albert Einstein, Sir Francis Bacon, Thomas Jefferson.
Hang on. You can stop already. I can already kind of picture this guy. I'm willing to bet his Facebook profile photo looks a lot like his sex offender registry photo.
No, I'm not John Locke, Thomas Paine, Samuel Adams, Paul Revere. Just keep he enjoys Green Day, Europe.
Europe.
Celtic women.
I like it.
Christine Chenoweth. Jace Bedeau. Paramore. Oh, yeah. Paramore.
Sounds like you if you came from Arkansas.
It's actually a woman.
What?
Yep.
What? Someone who identifies as a woman is, I think, is more accurate.
No. Her name, you know how you have like a Facebook address?
Mm-hmm.
It's Bring Down the Illuminati and the New World Order. I feel like if I link this Facebook profile, I feel dirty because that just makes me a terrible person and a Facebook stalker. But I'll do it anyways.
Yeah, I'd do it. What?
Maybe it's just because we're looking at her from the side, but she actually looks vaguely attractive.
I need proof. Link.
But if we look at her friends, man.
I don't like her.
Yeah, I don't like her. Let's find more people who like Jay. There's actually a surprising amount of women who seem to like JList. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I think chicks like Japan for the interesting fashion sense and culture?
No, it's actually... No, not at all. It's because they're similar to their male equivalents in liking anime.
Oh, perhaps, yeah.
And just being terrible people, mostly.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that.
It's probably just mostly being a terrible person.